good morning, Second Service. By the way, this is the secret, but I'm going to tell you, Second Service, favorite service of mine. I like you guys. That sounds terrible. It's like a parent saying they like one child more than another. Bad pastor. All right, it's good to be with Second Service today. Second Service online, Second Service in the room, everything else fantastic to be chilling with you. Now, before we get underway, a couple of little housekeeping things I want to let you know about. This is a fun fact that maybe you aren't aware of. But officially, 13 years ago on this very day was the official on paper birth of Redemption Church. And so we hadn't had a meeting yet, hadn't met on a Sunday morning or anything like that, but it was the day that the state of Washington gave us a tax ID status. So I know. Well, it's, First Service didn't clap. That's why you're my favorite. All right. So. Right, but it's kind of funny because I'm like, really, that's the big festive thing. Like, you got a tax ID, but when you're born, you get a social security number. So I guess that's the way we do it here. But the first official Sunday we had 13 years ago was the first Sunday of October, and that is next week for us as a church. And so next week is a big birthday bash. And so even if you're online but you're local to the area, we would encourage you to come for next Sunday. We've invited a handful of people that were just major like stakeholders over the years that made Redemption what it is. Made the building possible, everything else, are going to be here as well. It's just going to be fun, festive, balloons everywhere, great treats, the whole thing, and just kind of a trip down memory lane as far as, man, here's how we got here, how God did it, and now we're all doing it in this new space, so it's going to be great. So keep that in mind for next week. As to this week, it is week three. I got to think about this now. Things have been moving so fast, but it's week three of our current series, What Did You Say? Right? And this is really all about the words that we use, that words have power and words are sticky, right? They can stick in our person, they can stick to our reputation, they can stick to our psyche and our soul. They just have this kind of power. And so we're just doing this five-week series so we can slow down and realize that one of the most powerful things that happens in the world is the stuff that really comes from what we say. Now, last week, we talked about kind of an important theme. It's the theme of words that we speak that are to other people about other people, right? So kind of the dangers of gossip and slander and being the critical spirit and everything else. And we said, man, that stuff can really do damage to a community, to relationships, and all of that. Today, though, we're kind of pivoting a little bit, and we're looking at the words that are directly said from me to you, or me to you, or me to you, right? Where we step into the space of another, and then we have an exchange of some kind. And in that, again, we want to realize that the words that we say, man, they have weight, they have power. They can do things both to others or to us. And I would even go so far as to say sometimes a word that is said to us maybe in a negative way or in a hurtful way, it can stick so deep, we might spend years of our life repeating those words just to ourselves. You're always this, you're never that. That's right, they said that, and it still kind of haunts you to this day. It's all in there. And so we're going to explore this idea of the words we say to one another. That's the heart of week three. Now, the way we're going to approach this is going to be, we're going to start with a problem, and then we're going to move into a reality, and then from that, we're going to move into AIDS, right? So we're going to have 3 points today. They're going to try to cover all those bases. We are looking at a lot of stuff today, but I want to start by bringing you in to be a part of it, right? So it's like, hey, man, Second Service, you guys are smart, you're bright, you're on it. You are well-read and well-learned, and so I'm going to give you a little bit of a fill-in-the-blank, right? Of popular statements, and I want to see if you can fill in the blank at the end, and then we'll kind of talk about the commonality of all of these. And so here's the first one right here. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but... Yes, it can be names or words will go either. That might be an East Coast, West Coast thing. I don't know. So how about this one? I'm rubber, you're glue, whatever you say bounces off me and... Junior high, we just tapped into it. All right, right there. And this one, I handle insults like water off a... Duck's back. All right. So what do all three of these have in common? Lies. They are all lies. They do not represent the truth. If we are honest with ourselves, honest with our own kind of upbringing or whatever else, these three things, right? We find that oftentimes names or words really do hurt pretty deeply, right? And I can say, hey, bounces off me, sticks to you, but sometimes it really sticks in me. And I can say, man, it runs like water off a duck's back, but really it tends to cling and remind and hold and inform me in ways that I think maybe aren't so healthy. So words are powerful. Now, I'm going to bring another phrase into it, and it's one used in a different context, but as I thought about it this week, I thought, man, I'm going to use this for this week. Here is this phrase right here. Actions speak louder than words. Now, we typically use that in a certain sort of way, but as I was thinking about this phrase this week, I'm like, I actually think that words, man, words, they do speak louder. Whether we want to acknowledge it or not, admit it or not, be comfortable with that or not, I find that sometimes it is words that have the most impact, make the most concussion in the lives of people. That they just kind of embed themselves and they stay with you. Now, on the positive, that can be really, really powerful. If it's words that are encouraging, words that are inspiring, words that are hopeful, man, that can light your life up in a powerful way. I think about it in my own life. My sixth grade teacher, Tim Bolick, right? He just spoke words into my life at a time where I was very down as a kid, very insecure in my person, and he just, man, inflated the balloon. Or my youth pastor, Jim Harper, who came into my life when I was like 15 years old, and when you're 15, you know, you got your own stuff, and I had my own stuff, and he just loved me, encouraged me, inspired me all along the way. Then there was this young woman named Ellen Stewart that I convinced to marry me finally, and she spoke words that were so powerful in my life that I needed. At the same time, there has also been words that just cut and sliced and wounded. Discouraging words, negative words, critical words, you name it, just words that can come and they just lay deep inside your psyche. Maybe words in a family or friendship or in your marriage or coworkers or whatever it is. Solomon says it this way in Proverbs 12:18. He says, there is one whose rash words are like sword thrusts. That's a good image, right? Because as I was pondering this, I was realizing that, you know what, there are some occasions where words are like a scalpel. So somebody comes in cautiously, carefully, and they're saying things that, yeah, it's going to cut, but the motive behind that is to bring healing. They're not trying to wound you. They're trying to actually heal you and say some things in such a way that can bring healing, even though at first it's going to cut a little bit. That's totally cool. That's great. But I think oftentimes in moments of frustration or anger or self-defense or just, you know, whatever it is, like feeling violated in some way, we pull out words that are daggers, that they stab and they thrash and they wound. And so we want to just realize that of all the things in our world, words really matter. Now, with that all said, I want to remind you, and maybe if you're new with us, you didn't know, but in our app, there's a bunch of stuff, and one of the things in the app is notes that you can follow along with. It's digital, you can fill in the blanks, everything else, all the verses, the points we're talking about today is all in there, and you might want to use this one uniquely for as you go forward from today, because there's going to be some tools at the end that you go like, hey, those are good reminders. I might print that off, put that someplace that I can just kind of recall, like, yeah, those are the principles I want to work by, right? So that's going to be it. For that, though, I want to go ahead and just pray now that you know about the notes. We're going to be racing today. We're going to be looking at a lot of stuff. But let's go ahead and pray and settle our hearts for today. Jesus, I'm looking to you. I'm looking to you to take the stuff that because kind of flies into the room out of my mouth and apply it to individuals in the way that you see fit. The thing that sticks for them, matters to them, speaks to them. I just rely on you. But help us to do this in a way that is constructive, not destructive, that is inspirational, not just simply like, oh, that's where I fail. May we all have some, again, wind in our sails to be what you want us to be. And so we look to you, Jesus. We love you. We certainly thank you, and we need you in your good and perfect name. Amen. All right, so I said there's three parts, problem, reality, and AIDS. I always like to start with the problem, and here's why. My personality type is of the nature that if somebody comes to me and says, so, do you want the bad news first or the good news first? Bad every time, right? I want the bad news first because I want to know what I'm up against, and then from there we can kind of march forward. And so we're going to kind of look at, quote, the bad news, if you will, when it comes to this three-point talk for the day, and it's the first thing in your notes. And that is the reality that not all words carry the same weight. Not all words carry the same weight. And to illustrate this, I'm going to turn to some research, right? So this isn't my thing. This is some research in different fields. And I'm going to show you these three components of research, and I'm going to see if you can figure out what they're related to, all right? And so here's the three. The 4-to-1 ratio of effective teaching, the 5-to-1 magic ratio of marriage, and the 6-to-1 ratio of successful leadership. Does anybody know what these ratios have to do with? Yes. Exactly right. If you didn't catch that, for every one negative, bad, or critical statement you make as a teacher, you need to offset it with 4 positives. In marriage, 5 positives for 1 critique. In business, 6-to-1. And again, I look at some of these and go like, 1,000-to-1. Right? You know, like, you could go all over the map with this. But it's teaching us something from a secular perspective. Forget what the Bible's saying for a minute. Even from a secular perspective, if we put it on a scale, here's what it means, right? The negative, one negative, will always outweigh multiple positives. Like if 4-to-1 was the best closest ratio, that still means that, man, our negative words just have way more power to inflict damage than even our positive words. But see, I don't even think I have to go far to, like, make that point. Like, imagine for a minute. Like, I'm going to put you into a space where your job is to run an event. Let's say it's for a school or for the city or for your workplace, whatever it is. So you run this event. You put on the thing. It's all finished. It's all done. People are coming up to you saying, that was awesome. That was fun. You crushed it. That was so fantastic. Can't wait for next year, whatever it is. You got, like, a dozen people that say something awesome to you, and then that one person, all right? It's like, oh, that was a drag. That was a bummer, man. You ran that? Maybe I should find somebody else to do it next year. Right? That one negative is what you will drive home with. Right? A dozen people said it was fantastic, but all you heard was how bad it was. And it's just going to haunt you and sit with you, and it's going to kind of eat away at you a little bit. And that's kind of the nature of things. Now, I'm going to bring this a little bit closer to home, and I'm going to do this a few times today, and I want to make sure that I'm clear. I'm going to be talking about a relationship that I had with my father growing up all the way into my adult life, and he and I have reconciled. We're on good terms and everything else, but there was a lot over the course of life, right? And I think it's useful to use sometimes your own world to articulate some of these things. And so there was a circumstance. I was in junior high, and our junior high, which was relatively small, and then had an elementary kind of below it, but our junior high teacher at the time decided we are going to do a play as junior hires, and of all the plays that she could pick, she picked The Importance of Being Earnest. It's a big play. It's a lot of words to memorize. It's not like just the easiest thing for junior hires to pull off, and I decided I wanted the lead in the play. And I got the lead. I was earnest, right? And so I was all excited, memorized my lines, rehearsal for weeks upon weeks upon weeks, and finally the big night's there. And again, I was always trying to impress my dad, all the way up even to junior high. Like, I always felt like I didn't measure up. I wasn't the son he wanted, all these kinds of things. But now I got the lead in the play. I'm going to have him come and watch and be mesmerized by my power and prowess and abilities and all this stuff. And so do the play, and it's all finished. And afterwards, you know, my teacher's like, good job. And fellow students are like, that was great. And parents were like, you did such a good job. And then I come weaving through because I'm trying to get to my dad. Man, I got to get to that guy. And I get there, and I'm like, and he's just kind of like standing there. I kind of linger, and there's nothing. I linger some more, and there's nothing. And so I finally say, so what did you think? And he goes, yeah, I couldn't really hear it, so I couldn't track. I don't think I'll come to any of your plays anymore. Legit. And he never came to another one of the plays I did. All right? Never did. And eventually, you know what that does? I stopped doing plays. Right? Because it's like, that didn't impress. That didn't work. That didn't fit. That didn't give the thing that I needed. So I was devastated, to say the least. First of many occurrences of that nature. But as I thought about it, I think I was wounded for 2 different reasons, right? One is words not said that perhaps should have been said. And then the other was for words said that shouldn't be said. Both of these apply, right? And so you think about it, even in our own lives, right? Words not said that should be said are things like when a person says, my dad was just not that kind of person that ever said I love you. He just didn't do that. It just wasn't that thing in him. Or my mom never said they were proud of me, right? Words not said. Maybe the words not said are simple things like, I let you down, forgive me. Maybe those are the words not said that should have been said. Instead, there was other words that were said in their place, things like, you blew it again, or you could have tried harder, you could have been better, right? Sometimes in really ugly spaces, especially like in marriages, we can say things like, I'm so sick of you. I wouldn't have chosen you if we had it to do over again. I'm done with you. I'm finished. I'm out, right? Or threatening things, or just bitey things, or whatever else. All these things, man, they cut us deep, right? Those are the negatives. In fact, here are some categories of negatives. The critical, the cynical, and the comparative, right? There's a whole lot more. But I think these three are kind of helpful because you kind of understand what it is. So like the cynical, that's just nitpicky, right? Or the critical, rather. That's one that's kind of nitpicky. You never do it right. You failed on that one. Or as kids, man, as kids, we can be ruthless, right? Just critical, like, hey, Four Eyes. Hey, Carrot Top. Hey, you're fat. Hey, you're skinny. You're too tall. You're too short. Whatever it is. And then these insecurities get thrown into our person. That's the critical. And then the cynical is kind of the, I don't know if I really believe in you kind of messaging. I don't know if you'll really pull it off. I don't know if you're really going to get there. I don't know if you're really the kind of person. I know a person whose parent literally said to their son, you're just never going to be a leader. You're just never going to be a leader. You should find things where you're just serving people. Right? It's like, man, thanks for raising the bar, mom and dad. Right? Or the comparative. The comparative is just like, well, why can't you be more like your dad? Or more like my dad? That's always the good one. Or why can't you be more like my mom? Or to a kid, why can't you be more like Jimmy? Like, he does sports, he does all this stuff, he's popular with the kids. You just want to play video games and be online all day. Why can't you be more like? Or husband says to his wife, why can't you be more like his wife? She's really cool. Why can't you be more like her husband? Yeah, he's more focused and driven. See, it's all in there, right? In fact, as I think about these three ideas, I've decided that these negatives are worth their weight in gold. I want to say that again. These negatives are worth their weight in gold, which means they're weighty and they're costly. They're heavy, and they take a costly toll on people who face them. Solomon in Proverbs 15:4 said, a soothing tongue is a tree of life, but when it twists things, it breaks the spirit. Breaks the spirit, right? Some versions say it rots the bones or crushes the soul. And see, I'm going to assume, I don't know your story, but I'm assuming most of us at some point with some person had something said into us, and then maybe we even keep recycling it in ourselves where it did that thing. It crushed our soul. It just did a thing that left this long-term effect on our lives. So again, kind of talking about with my father, there was, if it wasn't kind of a critical spirit, it was this idea of kind of comparative. Why can't you be more like your cousin Jeff? He does X, Y, and Z, right? And here's how laden I got with that. I became an overachiever as I became a young adult, trying to earn favor, trying to earn respect, trying to earn praise, whatever it was. Like, I was like, I'm going to accelerate so my father finally sees that I became the son he always wanted that I wasn't. Right? So my wife and I bought a house. She was 19, I was 20. And I'm like, ha, I bought a house as a young person, and just trying to get some praise. Didn't get the praise. I became a lead pastor in a church at 24. I don't know what church was crazy enough to hire, bring on a 24-year-old, never done it before in any other capacity but a youth pastor. But I come on at 24, right? And I'm like, now he'll be impressed. So much so that they had an installation service for me, like my first official Sunday. And they're like, who do you want to have speak at your installation service? I'm like, I want my dad. I want my father to speak so he can stand there, give a message, and then I can come up and hug, shake hands. I did it. He can say, well done, son. Like, that was my thing, right? And so that day came, and he gave a speech. And I don't remember having anything to do with, like, my son there. It was like he just gave a speech. And then I came up and I did my thing. And then afterward, it was that same junior high boy lingering, waiting for the thing. And you know what he said to me? He goes, "You look like you're putting on some weight. You probably want to lose some weight because being a pastor is hard on your heart." And I remember just being like, okay. And it put me on this thing. I kept constantly trying to impress, to get the praise. And it was funny, throughout the years, if you quiz my wife, that would be one of the most consistent conversations. She's like, "Why do you keep trying to get him to see this thing in you? You're already that, and you're trying to please him and impress him and get his praise." I'm like, right, because that little boy all the way through, man, those wounds just stuck, and I always just wanted that thing. Couldn't get that thing, right? And so it's interesting then, as a parent, you decide when you've had that happen to you, "I will never do that to my kids. I will never let that happen." Until you do. Until you do. And this isn't like the part of the story that I love to tell. In fact, I'd love to not tell it, but I think it's important. I always try to be transparent and say, hey, learn from my life, learn from my mistakes as much as anything good that I might do. But with my daughters, I was so good at this. Like, it was so good. Like, I was just constant praise, like 10,000 positives, and I'll just deal with this one little critique, right? But then my youngest is my son. He's 24 years old now. And actually, for a large chunk of his life, it was the same. They're all three, just lots of praise, lots of encouragement, lots of inspiration. "I believe in you, da-da-da-da-da." But if you don't know our story, or if you're new to Redemption, my son is gay. And when he was about 12 was when that kind of hit our radar, right? And I'm an evangelical pastor, and I might have a gay son, and I kind of know my evangelical world and how, at least historically, it's kind of spoke about those things, dealt with those things, addressed those things, how it talks about that population out in the world as though they're the others. And I'm like, my son's going to be judged, my son's not going to be liked, my son's going to be stereotyped, all this kind of stuff. And so in the heart of wanting to guard him, I began to critique him, right? And so with simple things like, dude, don't walk like that. Don't stand like that. Don't talk like that. Don't wear that, right? So about a year and a half ago, I wrote an article about this. It's kind of lengthy. It was like how, you know, things I learned, mistakes I made, everything else. And it was interesting because, and I think I'll keep my cool at this point, but I was going through that whole, like, don't do this, don't do this, don't do, and I wrote this line when I wrote the article, and then I just sobbed for, I don't remember how long, I just sobbed. When I had to write the line, "I was my son's first bully," right? And I can tell you from that little season of his life, because, you know, it was like 12, 13, which is a very impressionable time for a little soul, right? And from that little chunk of time, for the thousands of positives that I spoke, there is these phrases of negatives, these certain selective words at certain selective times, and it just put an anchor inside of him that he still has to wrestle through to this day. And we've talked, and he's forgiven me, and we're on really great terms, and it's all very positive between us. But again, I still know that I said things that just grabbed him and pulled him under. And that's on me. That's on me, right? So that's kind of, again, the power of words. Reminds me of something Paul says in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4. He says, "Fathers, do not exasperate your children, but nourish them in the instruction and admonition of the Lord." Exasperate, literally in Greek, means to remove breath, take their breath away in the negative, right? Strip them of the thing that is life. Life and breath are connected in the biblical ideas here. And it was like, man, I kind of did that with my kid at times. And yet here's the reminder, don't do that, do this thing instead. And it was interesting, I took this week, and I actually changed it just a little bit, and I just took out fathers and children. I just put lines. And I realized we all can use this passage, right? Teachers, don't exasperate your students, but. Managers, don't exasperate your people underneath you, but. Right? Doesn't matter. You know, people in the community, don't exasperate other people in the community, but. Nourish, encourage, build up, those kinds of things. Now, I know some of you might say, but Matt, we're still called to parent and to lead and to guide and everything else. And sometimes when you do that, there must be critique or criticism. And that requires words So how do we do this? How do you thread the needle on these things? Well, that's going to be point three, right? And we're not quite there yet, but if you need a little bit of direction on that, it'll be coming down to the words that are chosen, the tone that is used, the outcome that is sought, right? And we'll unpack that. But for now, I just want us to understand that, man, words are weighty, words are powerful, words make a difference, right? For good or for bad. In fact, that takes us to point two in your notes. Our words create the world that we live in, right? Our words create the world that each of us live in. So just like in Genesis 1, it says God spoke and it created a world, what we also see in Genesis 1 is that he made us image bearers, and because we bear his image and we have the capacity for speech, it's like he said, and then in the world that I've made, your words will also create worlds within that world. You'll create frameworks by which people operate with one another. So you have your work world, you have your family world, and you have your hobby and interest world, and you have your entertainment world, and you have your inner personal world. All of those worlds are built on words. And if they're positive and encouraging and helpful, that is the best world to live in, right? Your little world's great. But if it's negative and it's harsh and it's critical and it's a downer, that world sucks to live in. If that's the world of your marriage, or if that's the world of your parent-child relationship, or if that's the world of your work, if it's negative, it's terrible, it's positive, it's awesome, right? It's all in there. In fact, I remember when we were a young family, because my kids are 28, 26, and 24 now. But when we were a young family, and I was a young pastor, and I was way over my head because I was overachieving, but I really didn't have all the capacity to do it and everything else, there was just a lot of stress in my heart because I was trying to, again, always earn and be approved and everything else, and then I felt like I never was doing good. I was constantly telling myself that was bad, that was wrong, you suck at this, whatever. Like, so it's all in there, right? So I'd finally come home to that world, and I would come with that baggage of the day. And I might be kind of heavy. I was never mean. I never was a yeller. I wasn't a ranter or anything like that. But I'd just be kind of heavy, and my words would be like, whatever, right? And I remember one time Ellen said to me, she says, you know, how you come home sets the tone for the world that we all live in with you. And if it's encouraging, it's great. If it's negative or neutral, it's not so great. And I'm like, it's so true that that is what kind of shapes the environment. Proverbs 11:11 says, upright citizens are good for a city and make it prosper, but the talk of the wicked tears it apart. I mean, I love the simplicity there. Like, he's just saying, you know, when people are speaking in an ill-intended way or in a way that is destructive, it really does ripple and affect many things. And it's the same with your home, your work, your community. It doesn't matter. Like, what we're saying in the spaces that we inhabit are shaping those spaces. In fact, I think when we think about this, it's like spheres of influence. So I have this diagram that I put together this week of these circles. So you're there in the center, right? And you have a sphere of influence, and it kind of ripples out. And the further it ripples out, the less effect our words have. But at the most close network, that's like your family. So like in this diagram, I kind of chose my wife and my three kids as like the most close thing. And then next is going to be like friends that I'm really close with and have a tight relationship to, and certain acquaintances or whatever else. And then further out, it's going to be kind of the general community. And further out, it's going to be the billions of people on the planet, whatever it is. But where the words were spoken in that closest nucleus, man, that means proximity means impact, right? Whoever's closest to me is going to feel, for good or bad, whatever it is I'm saying, right? And so if you're a celebrity, obviously your words have all kinds of impact. But if you're just like a regular person like me, like my words do not affect downtown Seattle at all. Not at all. My words would barely affect downtown Duval at all. But they'll affect Redemption Church more, and they'll certainly affect my close friends more, and they'll certainly affect my family the most, right? And what we have to realize then is, based on the proximity of people that we have in our life and the influence that can be there, we can do a lot that either brings encouragement or discouragement, right? We can either boldly encourage or we can profoundly discourage. And here's why I think this is weird. In week one, I talked about the fact that it's a strange reality that sometimes the people we love the most are the ones our words hurt the most. It's strange that we are almost willing to hurt the people we care about the most, we're closest to the most, because it's like we let our guard down. Versus if it's just some stranger in the community, it's a completely different kind of thing, right? Now, kind of in this, you know, I don't want us to say like, oh, so I can say whatever I want to the Costco checker and it doesn't matter because they're outside of my ultimate sphere, right? Like, no, you don't want to do that. But what I am saying is you could say the same thing to a Costco checker as you would to your child that might be in the negative, and the Costco checker is just going to be like, that person's a jerk, moving on, give me a box, right? But with your kid might be like, oh, I'm going to hold on to that because somebody that's really important to me, close to me, cares about me, said something uncaring to me, and now I'm going to let that just kind of stick in my gut. In fact, I came across this quote, and I'm not sure fully who it's attributed to. It kind of got attributed to different people, but it's a formula. Source determines weight. Weight determines impact. Impact determines outcome. All right? Pretty simple formula, and it's spot on. Like, I go back to my story. The source of some of my insecurity was my father. Thus, his words had unique weight. Where if it was just some stranger, a teacher I didn't like, didn't approve of, they could say something about me, and I'm like, fine, I'm going to talk about you in the hallway. You're a jerk, right? Doesn't have the same kind of thing. But source determines weight, and then weight determines the impact, right? Somebody that you're estranged from, soft. Somebody close to you, hard. Every once in a while, as a pastor, I'll get some not pleasant email from somebody in the community that I don't know, and I'm not like, oh, I'm going to die now. But if I get it from our elder board, I'm going to die now, right? Like, because it's different. Or impact determines outcome, right? It's just this idea that it's going to then shape us in a certain way because we feel the impact of these things, right? It's all there. That's why, again, like I said, my father had an impact on me because of the closeness he had in my life. And so I say all of this, I mean, part of it's informational, but part of it is also so we don't duplicate the same thing, because we're tempted to duplicate, we're even good at this. So how do we avoid that? Well, it's the third thing in your notes. It's using the weight of our words to create better worlds, right? If we are world shapers with our words, then we want to make sure that, man, I want to be on my best behavior with my words to shape a better world. Now, I'm going to give you a quick disclaimer. What I'm going to share today is like entry to mid-level reality on relationships and words. Sometimes in life, things go beyond the middle and push up into the extreme where the words are so harsh, the relationship is so broken, things are so just out of sync that you need additional help. You might need a counselor, you might need a therapist, you might need a physician with those things. Like, the marriage is just right on the rocks. There's so much tension between you and your kid. There needs to be a third party to help unstring some of the stuff being said. We love that here. We are fans of having that extra aid in the process, right? So what I'm talking about is mid-level, right? But you can use some of this stuff even in the hard things. But realize you might, for a really hard thing, need some added help. I just always want to give that as kind of a caveat because, again, I know of people that I love and love Jesus, and they get so spun up that, like, they cannot solve this by themselves. They need somebody else in the mix. They need pro help. For the rest of us that aren't maybe in that space, I look at John chapter 6. Jesus said, "The true bread of heaven is the one who comes down from heaven and gives life to the world." Notice he doesn't say here, gives his life for the world. It's like Jesus is also saying, when I come into the world, I want to give life to the world. I want to infuse it with life that they need. And then he says, "The very words that I've spoken to you are spirit and life." What I love about this is he is saying, you know what, I've come, I've shown up, and my agenda is abundant life for you, and the route to that is what I tell you to do. When you do that, that is the way you get closer to experiencing this deep life that I want for the world, this healing that reshapes the environment, right? And so for us, we go, then man, that means I need to embrace his words to know how to shape the world into a better space. You go, well, what is the top of his list for the way we most shape this? Greatest commandment, you must love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, and all your strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. No other commandment is greater than these. So it's giving us direction. You want to heal the world, words shape the world, your words shape the world in the right way, therefore I need to honor this command. So here's then the question I want us to walk away with as we go into this. And this is just for us as individuals. What does Jesus and love require of my words to promote better worlds and thus true life? I know that's a mouthful, But it's not saying, hey, what am I comfortable with? What do I feel like doing? No, it's like, hey, what does Jesus and what he calls me to in love require of me when it comes to what I say to create better worlds and thus life? Because here's the thing I can guarantee you. You have a choice. We all have a choice. Whether we're going to choose to follow Jesus or not follow Jesus, we all have a choice whether we're going to live for Jesus or not live for Jesus. Everybody has to face that choice, right? I affirm that. Even in my Calvinishness, I affirm that. But what we don't have a choice on is how we do that if we say we want to follow Jesus. So I can choose to follow Jesus, but if I'm saying I'm going to follow Jesus, then the way he defines it is the way I need to do it. If he models it a certain way, I have to mimic what he's modeled. I can't just say, well, he did it that way, but I do it this way. I have to kind of follow the pattern, right? That's the spirit of it. So let's see the pattern. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 1. Paul writes, follow God's example, therefore, as dearly loved children, and walk in the way of love. We're going to stop right there for a second because I like this, right? It's a call to action, right? Walk in the way of love, it's there. And then it's rooted in a relationship. We're dear kids of God's, right? And then more than that, it's based on an example. He says, do this just as Christ loved us and gave himself up for us. So it gives me kind of a tangible target. And I love this because if I was to say, okay, what do you mean by love as dearly loved children and do this love thing? Paul would say like, okay, exhibit one, Jesus. How did Jesus love you? And I go, well, a lot, tremendously, incredibly. In fact, he sacrificed himself for me. He suffered for me. He's like, right. So the same love that he's loved you with and the same willingness to give himself away for the sake of you, the one in front of him, he does for you more than he does for him. That is the model that you use. And I go, sweet, that's the model then. Can't escape it, right? If I'm going to live like Jesus, it means like Jesus I'm going to live. That's the way it kind of plays out. But there's another word in this little section here, and it's the word therefore. This is where I want to get your attention, right? I know some of you are like English nerds, and you kind of get this, but you have to ask when you see a therefore in the Bible, what's the therefore? Therefore, right? And the therefore is pointing back to something that's just been said. So if I said something to you and I said, therefore, do this, you would realize that the therefore to do this is connected to what I just said before the therefore, right? There's your lesson of the day, right? So what's before the therefore? It's all about words. That's what's interesting to me. So go back to chapter 4, verse 29. He says, do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouth. See, the image is like our brain and our heart is like a house of words. Jesus talked about that. And what he's saying is your mouth is like the door. Don't let overripe words come out of your mouth. That's what unwholesome means in Greek. It's literally unripe or overripe. It's rotten fruit. So don't let ripey things, because they smell, they stink, they're kind of just falling apart, right? Don't let that come out of your mouth. In fact, he says in its wholeness, do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up. And I highlighted this in color because I want to make sure we get, do not let any, but only, are very extreme. Any and only is sending a message, right? We don't want to make sure that, or we want to make sure that we're not letting kind of rank stuff come, but only positive, helpful, fruitful things come out. And then he gets into what all of that is. He says, don't grieve the Holy Spirit of God. Get rid of all bitterness and rage and anger and brawling and slander along with all forms of malice. Rather, he says, be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving other, just as Christ Jesus forgave you. Follow God's example, right? As dearly loved children and walk in the way of love, just as Christ loved us and gave himself for us, right? So he gives us some bearings on this. Unwholesome looks like this. Wholesome looks like that. Don't do those. Do these. It's all kind of in the topography of the passage. But then in this, there's that therefore. If we circle the therefore and what it means to walk in the way of love, what Paul is saying is your words are the way you show your walk in the way of love. Your words are the way you model Christ-likeness. Your words are the way you serve other people. So this isn't just like, oh, this is a good moral bearing. He's like, the way you display Jesus comes from what we say. I think that's pretty profound. Now, you'll notice one line goes off the screen because it takes us back to verse 29. Let's go back there. Do not let any, but only what is helpful for building others up. Here's the key. according to their needs, that it may be beneficial to those who listen, right? I think this is so valuable. This is a tough one, right? Because here's what it's saying. If I go, you know what? This is what I need to say to them. Paul's like, you don't get it. You can't go, well, this is what I need to say. This is what I need to get off my chest. He's like, that's not it. He's flipping it. He's like, it doesn't matter what you think you need to say. You need to worry about what they need to hear and the way they need to hear it. That you're speaking it in a way that will stick in them in the right way, not the wrong way. That you're going to move the needle on positivity in their life, not just try to be kind of a berating negative. It's for their benefit and their need. And in the same way that Jesus stepped into the world and he did stuff for our need and our benefit, when we weren't good about it, we weren't caring about what God was doing, he's like, no, but I know what you need. I'm going to give what you need, even though you might not even be grateful in the process. Back in Leviticus, it was the reading of the day, but I'm going to give you a little bit closer to the Hebrew. It says, do not nurse hatred in your heart for one of your relatives, which is fellow Israelites here. Confront people directly. Okay, so that's there. But incur no guilt because of them. And then he says, love your neighbor as yourself. Right? Rabbis debate this, and they've debated it for now 3,000 years. It's pretty impressive, right? One idea is to say, you need to confront them or you're going to be guilty with them. Like if you know they're doing something wrong and you don't confront them, you're guilty too. That's one way that this can be taken. Another is you need to confront them so you can remove the guilt from them, right? Maybe that's the idea. But still others, and I think this is really good, is it saying you need to confront, but as you do so, be careful that you don't become guilty of the way you do it makes it worse for them, not better. Then you'll be just as guilty for your sin as they are for their sin. How you deal with them may make you just as much a bad guy as any bad thing that they are doing. In fact, Rabbi Joseph Telushkin said it this way, it's finding a way to confront in such a manner that it inflicts the minimum amount of hurt while doing the maximum good. Right? Inflicts the minimum amount of hurt. Like, I got to talk to you about something, and I'm going to figure out the way that is best for your need, best for your circumstance, because I want to win you over. I'm not trying to beat you or best you or curse you or shame you. I'm trying to bring positive change to you. And so how can we do this? This is going to be lightning round here, right? We're going to real fast as we are finishing up. Here's some things that you can think about as you do this, and you might even write these down or print these off someplace. Here's the first thing. Come disarmed with empathy. See, sometimes when there's going to be a confrontation, we're armed with offense, we're armed with frustration, we're armed with superiority, we're armed with criticism, judgment, whatever it is. But here I'd say, come disarmed with empathy. In other words, if you were doing the same thing and it needed to be confronted in you, how would you want somebody to come to you with that? And disarm yourself like, man, I just, in their shoes, it could be really hard. And so you bring the salsa level down in your own person to do this. Here's the second one. Ask open-ended questions, I'd say, versus make statements. You said this, you did this, and it's like a lawyer, like, you know. Instead of like, hey, this happened, can I ask you about what happened there? You said this, can I just get some clarity? And I think even in this, and we learned this a couple weeks ago, think the best in that versus think the worst. The Bible encourages that. Here's another one. Use active listening. Active listening is like, I really want to get you. I really want to understand this. I really want to pay attention. I'm going to be active in the listening, not just active in the talking. Next, invoke positive language. Instead of being critical or negative, invoke positive language as you speak. What is good for the hearer? Here's another one. Speak to build up versus be puffed up. I told this story in the last service. There was this time where there was this guy going through this thing, and it was substantial, and I met with him, and I knew a little bit, but I assumed a lot, and I just ran him over. I just ran him over. You got this problem. I feel there's something you're hiding. There's some, like, I have no facts, right? I'm just like, I just think there's a, and I was so puffed up. I was so arrogant in the way I was confronting this poor guy. And by the way, this wasn't 20 years ago. This was 5 years ago, right? So mature Matt, still stupid and immature. Right? And to this day, I'm like, I wronged that guy because I was more proud in my approach than I was caring about building him up. Here's another one. add constructive coaching. I've decided constructive criticism rarely is constructive. It's usually just criticism. Like, honestly, I see it very poorly executed most of the time. It's like when people talk about righteous anger. I'm like, yeah, we're not good at it. We're better at anger, not really righteous most of the time. And I think in the same way, hey, we have to be constructive, but you want to coach it in a direction. And then next, give people time and space to absorb whatever's being said. You got to give them room, right? Like, you know, Ellen, she knows my thing. I'll have a conversation with somebody. She goes, how did it go? I go, I'll tell you in 24 hours. In the moment, I never really know. And after 24 hours, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. And then it takes more time, more conversation, whatever it is. But give space and time to absorb. So here are some kind of self-reflective diagnostics that you can ask yourself before going into a conversation where you don't want to use harsh words or whatever else or do damage. Here's the first one. Does addressing this issue give me grief or glee? Am I really proud of myself for being so smart? Or am I sad that I have to have this conversation because I know it's going to hurt and it's going to be hard, but I care about this person? Here's another one. Will the way I say this give them a clear way to change or fix things? If it's just like, you did this and you're not that and you suck and da-da-da, and I don't give them any constructive way to move forward, to do a thing, to make a change, am I really doing my job? Here's the third. Is my tone adding any unnecessary shame or unfruitful sting? Like, if you don't feel bad by the time we're done, I'll make sure you do. like that's not the way we want to come. We want to clear things up and make things right. In fact, that's the last thing. Is my goal giving them a piece of my mind or seeking peace for their life and peace between us? Because I've done that before, right? I'm getting it off my chest, and now it's in your lap. Good luck with that. I'm out, you know? And that doesn't bring help. It doesn't bring aid. It doesn't bring relief. I close with this passage out of Galatians 6. I didn't get to the first service. We didn't get there, but you get it. Dear brothers and sisters, if any believer is overcome by some sin, you who are godly should gently and humbly help that person back into the right path. And be careful not to fall into the same temptation yourself. Share each other's burdens, and in this way you will obey the law of Christ. You got to remember the world that he was living in was a legalistic world, and that might be part of the confrontation too. And he's just saying, hey, whatever we do, however we do it, we got to make sure that we err on the side of grace and gentleness and generosity. Let's go ahead and pray together. Jesus, so much is there, and there is so much power in our words, and we are so flippant with them. I've learned many times through error and trial, usually for other people, that my words have weight. I pray that we all own that, we all know that, and that we will forge better worlds with the words that we leverage. Help us to do that as we leave here today, as we go in the car with our family and friends, or hanging out with neighbors, or just out in the community, wherever it is, that we will be doubly mindful of what we say matters, and that we will run it through the grid of, hey, in the same way that Jesus loved and gave, I want to love and give by way of the words that I use. Give us that reminder, give us that fortitude, and give us that grace. We thank you, Jesus, in your name. Amen.